Hello, and welcome to another interview on GivingCirclesHelp.com, where we're compiling information and interviews from those around the country who are running Giving Circles. And our goal is to learn from each other and continuously improve our ability to make an impact with our giving. Today, I'm speaking with Sandy D., who is a board member with the Global Sojourns Giving Circle. Sandy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sharon.
Could you start by giving us an overview of your giving circle?
Yes. Our giving circle began in 2006, and it was the brainchild of Priscilla Macy, who has an adventure travel company. And her focus is Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, where she has gone a number of times, and she and her husband have lived. So she lived there for about 7 years, and she in fact is moving back right now in the process of going back there with her husband. But she would take people on tours, and they just were amazed by the land, the animals, and the kindness of the people. So many people would say, what can we do? Because they would see this abject poverty. What can we do to help? And so she did some research and learned about the concept of giving circle, and she actually called a number of her friends, 14 friends, asking them if they would consider donating, and not only donated money, but also donating their time and their expertise and their interest, and finding causes that we would support. And what we knew, when she called originally, that the focus would be sub-Saharan Africa and education for girls. Those were the two things, but we didn't know where we would be doing this or how we would vet the organizations. But out of those original phone calls, $14,000 was raised.
Wow.
So she actually asked for people to donate between $500 to $2,000. So it averaged to be $1,000 from those 14 people, which is, I think, pretty incredible for something we didn't really know what was going to be out there. So through a lot of vetting, both in Africa as well as from here, we selected two organizations, and they were in Livingston, Zambia. And the reason, that was the other thing, we wanted to have them on kind of main tourist areas because we wanted to have the ability for people who are on tours over there to actually visit these places so they could see firsthand the difference that it's making in the lives of the girls. So that's how it started, and so the two organizations are Rope and Tusa Munyandi. Both of them are grassroots organizations. One is run by a nurse and a woman from Livingston, Zambia, who saw the need in her community of needing to help achieve an education. And the other one is Tusa Munyandi, which is very small. It's on the outskirts of Livingston, Zambia, and it is run by a retired social worker from a hospital. And both of these organizations, we totally believe in them. We did a lot of vetting from other organizations, from CARE, from the city officials in Livingston, to see if they were reputable. And definitely were. So anyway, we started to work with them, and we have a lot of people, including Priscilla's husband, who is very good at requiring statistics and grants and all of that. So these two organizations had to write a grant to us, and we require reports every 3 months and want to know where the money is being spent and what are the outcomes. And so this is kind of new for them. They had done grants before, but not very sophisticated grants. So I think it has helped them more businesslike. And my hope is the larger of the two organizations, and older, it's about 12 years old now. And so they helped Tusa Munyandi, which was the newer organization. So the two of them have worked together. We've also been able to find a volunteer accountant who is working with both organizations to teach them more about accounting principles. The things that we've achieved in those two organizations is we've done microloans for caregivers of the children, and so that helps them pay for tuition, uniforms, school supplies. So we did that initially. What we are sort of evolving into now is that we've been working with those two organizations, and we're doing career-building workshops where we have successful women in Livingston come and talk about what they do. And it has gone over beautifully. So the girls are like 6th grade to maybe 12th grade, and they can actually go to these workshops and listen to women who have made it and are successful and have an education. That has been unbelievable. These girls are so excited because they realize by staying in school, they too have a chance to go on for a higher education.
Mm-hmm.
The third organization that we started to work with maybe 3 years ago is down in Cape Town. It's called Chicaleza, and it is for girls who are from the informal townships, informal settlements, who can come to these clubs, and what they are focusing on is dance. So these kids who are dirt poor would never have had an opportunity to do something extracurricular like this, or getting to learn to dance, express themselves, and they're staying in school. It's building their self-esteem. They not only are learning dance, but they're learning about the value of education, the importance of being able to say no, because I think so many young girls get caught up with young guys and have babies at a very young age. The rampancy of AIDS is so prevalent in sub-Saharan Africa. So they're learning to value themselves. And that, so we're kind of evolving into more of that, to just self-esteem building. And that is definitely carried through, so these girls are staying in school. So those are the three organizations we're presently working with, and we are starting to look now to organizations that are in Zimbabwe.
So you have a very long-term relationship with these organizations.
Yes.
How did you end up choosing them in the first place? Do you have a sort of process that you go through, nomination? How do organizations come to your attention, and then how do you end up picking them? Do you have to agree or vote? What does that look like?
Well, we learned about organizations through other organizations here in the U.S. that had given them small loans and felt that they were worthy and had used their money wisely. And the initial loans and still are kind of small. I mean, they're $5,000, $3,000. So we're not talking about huge amounts of money, but they also give leverage to those organizations because they have been able to use money from other grants they've gotten and augment our money and offer these. But what we would do is Priscilla has able to be there and learned about these organizations. I've been there and actually would go and visit these organizations and meet them, see hands-on what kind of things they're doing, and we would then bring that information back, and we had conference calls with the people, those original 14 people, and we would tell them about maybe, I think initially we had like 6 organizations that we had vetted and felt were very good, and then our 14 members would listen, and we would tell them, you know, what we had seen, and then what did they think? What were their choices? So we narrowed it down to the initial 2, and then eventually added the 3. So yeah, it was input from all of our members. We have since then got a committee, a vetting committee, and they do all the research, and so then they bring it to the membership. and can then give their recommendations. And since that time, we've really gone with the recommendations of the that small core group.
Mm-hmm.
So when we took our third organization on, Jikalaza, they had visited them, and then we said, yeah, if you feel good about them, we'll go with that.
Now, in the long-term relationship that you've had with these organizations, do you know that going in, that this is something that you're going to want to fund for multiple years, or has it happened that you just choose to keep supporting them?
I guess that's the beauty of a giving circle, because not only are we helping those organizations and helping those girls get an education, but here the members that are in the U.S. are learning. I mean, we have books that we recommend to read. We're learning about poverty and the AIDS, how it's so prevalent. I mean, you can read things in the newspaper, but we're actually learning so much. So I don't know. I think that this has become very, very important for members, because they're giving the money as well as the learning themselves about these issues that the kids and their caregivers are experiencing in Africa.
Is it a book club, and you guys come together to talk about the books?
Well, good question. We've evolved. We've learned. International giving is very hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is hard, because here in this country, like, there's United Way, and you know they have their requirements and their grant proposals and all of that. Over there, it just, we have not found anything like that. So I guess what we've done is we've evolved that the book club was to learn about issues. So we're not located in one city. We are throughout the whole country, our members. And so what we do is recommendations, and we have a quarterly newsletter that goes out online. And so we make recommendations. And then what we've done, and this is kind of new as well, for people who are interested in talking about the book, to call in. We have a conference number that everybody calls in, and we can discuss the book. We also do quarterly calls to talk about different issues. And one of our calls, we were more heavily into the microcredit. We had a professor from Yale who's kind of a world expert on microcredit, and he was on our call. So when we try to have these really valuable one-hour calls every 3 months where people are learning. For instance, we had someone who was on our call last time who had just traveled and visited those organizations. And she came back. She'd never been to Africa. I believe it was a birthday present from her husband for her 50th birthday. So she came back and just was so enthusiastic about what we are doing over there, what is being accomplished. So she was the guest speaker for us 2 months ago. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. Because our members are all over the country, we find that some people don't even want to get on the calls. They don't care about the book club. They just pay their annual money. And what we did, this is another learning thing. As I told you, when Priscilla initially asked people to give the amounts of $500 to $2,000, some people gave $2,000. Some people said, I can't afford $500, you know. So we decided that to make this more open to people of all different backgrounds of finance, we would ask them if they can't give more, if they would give a dollar a day. So would they give $365 a year?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a number of people who've come in the last couple of years at the $365 level. So like many of them just give that, and that's all their participation is. They don't have time or the interest. They totally defer it to the vetting committee and the board to run this, and they don't really want to give any more input than that. Others are very much more engaged, and we welcome everybody. I mean, if from the people who are interested in just giving to the people who say, yeah, I would like to really do some volunteer work for this and do the newsletter or help with the vetting or be sure that the reports come in every 3 months. So we've got people of we've got our 501c3 earlier this year, and we had a volunteer who did all the paperwork for us to get our 501c3, which was enormous, you can imagine.
Yeah.
So we do giving, or we give dolls. We have found that many of the children there have no toys. I mean, they may find a stick or a rock or a little piece of wire, and that is something they form into a toy. That's what they have. So we have a group of people, of I believe it's all women, and they're older women, and they wanted to know what could they do. So they are doing these dolls, these little darling dolls that have, they're made out of like calico, so they're not gender specific, they're not color specific, they're just colorful dolls. And we are, as our people go over there for tours, they pack their suitcases with maybe 20 dolls, and they're maybe a foot tall and darling, and we are then giving them to the organizations for them to give to kids who are in a crisis. And so many of the kids are losing their mom, or their dad may not be in the picture. So we let the organizations give to the kids who are going through some really, really hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so again, that's a way people can become involved. But if they don't have the ability to give money to help fund these programs over there, if they have the sewing. So I have a cousin who's, her church has gotten involved in giving not very much money, but a little bit of money. And then also she's learning to sew these dolls, which is darling. I mean, she's not a very good seamstress, but each doll is getting better and better. And, little stuffed dolls with a heart. And then they just take like a magic marker and mark the face with a smile. And so we've got a number of pictures where these kids are getting their dolls. And it's so heartwarming because it might be the first doll or the first toy they've ever had.
That's wonderful. And it shows that anybody can do something that makes a difference.
Right.
So you started off with 14 members. How many members do you have today?
Well, we call a member someone who actually gives $365 or more. So we probably have about 50. And then we have people who give less than that. Our youngest donor, we kind of differentiate between members and members. So 365 up is a member, less than that is a donor. And our youngest was 10. She was 10 years old. And she gave $25. So, yeah, I would say about 50. So we're still small. We have people who've given and then have dropped off, and it's kind of interesting. What we're doing now is writing them a letter on their anniversary date of when they first gave, and we're asking if they will give again. Sometimes people drop off for 1 or 2 years, and then they come back. We're finding people that have been not involved suddenly are re-involved.
Are you keeping in touch with them in any way?
Well, we are sending out a letter on that anniversary date of when they gave. So even if they gave like 2 years ago and then haven't given again, we still send a letter out.
Oh, okay.
And that, I think, has been what's kind of piqued their interest again, and they've kind of reconnected with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing that. We also let them know about our website and that they can get the newsletter online if they would like to. And most of the people want to, and in fact, we keep them. I mean, they are always. We send out our newsletter to everyone, so even if you haven't given for a couple of years, you still get the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to kind of keep this in their minds about the need for the money. to help these girls. For me personally, it's been fantastic because I've been to Africa previously and saw the poverty, but to see these kids, it's just heartwarming, and you know that you're making a difference. And the kids, so many of them are orphaned, and they're living with their grannies or a neighbor or an auntie. And, I mean, the poverty is overwhelming. But to know that we're giving them a chance, and I'm sure you're aware of this as well, but the more education that it gets, the less likely she is to have a child really young in life. Even to have a child at 17 is so much better than to have a child at 13, mm-hmm. because their chances of taking care of the child, a healthier child, a healthier community, because in many African societies, it's matriarchal. So the mother is the one who is the main person there in that village who can, you know, get the child immunized for trying to keep them from getting diseases. It's just the one who really makes a better society. And so we're just realizing, and I think this is across the board, that if that mom has a bit more education, that it's just going to be better for the society.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, where is it that you get your new members? Are they mostly from people who have gone on the traveling with Global Sojourns?
That's a really good question. Yes. So we just got yesterday somebody who'd been on a trip became a member. Just had gone over there, seen the needs, seen what we're doing, and became a member. I think a lot of members are also, it's word of mouth. Like, I live here in Denver, and so I have a friend who was nice enough to host a get-together a few years ago, and she invited people. Priscilla Macy, who is the founder, she was in town, and she invited some of her friends because she used to live here in Denver, and then I invited some of my friends. And so from the three of us inviting our friends, new people became members.
Mm-hmm.
So just, I had lunch the other day with somebody, and she said, you know, I've never been to Africa, and I gave because you believe in it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think it's word of mouth. But again, people who go on these trips, and Priscilla asks them if they would like to actually go to see these organizations, and because it's right there on the tour, because Cape Town is a big tourist area for people who go to Africa, as Livingston. So, I think that's it. People just hear about it. You know, they'll say, oh, you know, what are you doing with your time these days? Because I've always been involved in volunteerism, and I'll say, well, I'm part of this giving circle. So that, well, tell me more about it. So it's just interesting. I would say word of mouth and the travel.
Okay. Yeah. So we're approaching the end of our time, and I want to ask you if you have any advice for managing a giving circle with people all who, you know, instead of coming together once a month to meet in person, you're doing a lot of this via conference call, I'm assuming. Do you have any advice for how to manage that process?
Well, I think it's important to keep communication going, but we don't want to do it too often because we feel that people are so busy in their lives. So we have these quarterly conference calls, and we've got a telephone access where everybody calls in, and at a certain number, at a certain time, we send that out in our newsletter so they know when we're going to have the conference call. So it's they have to pay for it. It's a long distance call, but yet it's minimal. So I think that just to keep the communication going through these conference calls, which have a guest speaker. So I think it's important to let people continue to learn and grow themselves, learn about the issues. And then I think our newsletter that we send out every quarter, that is, again, another communication tool So I think that it's just ongoing open communication.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you would, that I should have, you'd like to share with us?
I just feel that all of our members have felt that they have learned so much personally. So I would say that Giving Circles not only is the recipient of the funds, fortunate, but I think the people who give are also, it has enhanced their lives. So I think it's not that, I just think it's a win-win for everyone involved. I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah, I think there's something important about engaging with your donation dollars in a way that a giving circle facilitates that makes giving so much more fulfilling. And I can't really explain why, it's just my feeling that it makes a difference.
I totally
changes
agree.
Things. Well, Sandy, thank you so much for participating today and sharing with us your experience with the Global Sojourns Giving Circle.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Sharon.